Now, more Ebling and You on More Compelling Talk Radio, 1320 WILS.
Well, back on our Superman we were just kind of talking about, actually, Michigan State could have really used Superman a few times with plays, have the clock go back, and he could turn the world back on certain games. And actually, you know, talking about how wacky psychologists can be, we're actually talking about a new hero we have. John, who's going to come back for another year of coaching?
Joe Paterno, so this won't be his last game.
So he's a hero for lasting till he's 84, which he would be by next year.
Yeah, no, he'll be 84 in December, I believe.
For the next year.
Next year he'll be 85.
And on top of that, of course, I think that if we have any chance to win that game this week, it's going to have to be done, you know, with not being his...
Happy Valley.
That's right. Now, you know, back on this, the heroes... I want to read one other thing. John mentioned to me about another Churchill, and I want to throw this out there. If you're listening, you're saying, well, these are speeches by people that are, they may be alive, they may be dead, they may be, but you know, this is an age of talkers. And I think if we can read and look at things, it clearly makes, it really makes something important. But just hear these words. This is Churchill again. When Britain is alone fighting in the war, we shall not flag or fail. We shall go on to the end. We shall fight in France. We shall fight on the seas and oceans. We shall fight with growing confidence and growing strength in the air. We shall defend our island, whatever the cost may be. We shall fight on the beaches. We shall fight on the landing grounds. We shall fight in the fields and in the streets. We shall fight in the hills. We shall never surrender. Those are words. We can be a hero in a moment, but this is one of those things where, as John F. Kennedy said, mobilize a language and send it to war. One other thing I would suggest to all of you, if you want to take words that really inspire, you might want to Google John F. Kennedy's inaugural address. I've heard many inaugural addresses, but this is really something. And if you read it, you'll actually find it hard to believe because he sounds so different than maybe anyone we have now. And I'm going to read a little bit, not to bore you, but this is John F. Kennedy's inaugural, and I really think it is amazingly wonderful. We all know about the statement, ask not what your country can do for you, but ask what you can do for your country, from Tullius Cicero, the old Roman, I might add. But let me just read this. This is John F. Kennedy. We dare not forget today that we are the heirs of that first revolution. Let the word go forth from this time and place to friend and foe alike, that the torch has been passed to a new generation of Americans, born in this century, tempered by war, disciplined by a hard and bitter peace, proud of our ancient heritage, and unwilling to witness or permit the slow undoing of those human rights to which this nation has always been committed, and to which we are committed today at home and around the world. Let every nation know, whether it wishes us well or ill, that we shall pay any price, bear any burden, meet any hardship, support any friend, oppose any foe, in order to assure the survival and success of liberty. This much we pledge and more. To those old allies whose cultural and spiritual origins we share, we pledge the loyalty of faithful friends. United, there is little we cannot do in a host of cooperative ventures. Divided, there is little we can do, for we dare not meet a powerful challenge at odds and split asunder. And to the new states, whom we welcome to the ranks of the free, we pledge our word that one form of colonial control shall not have passed away merely be replaced by a far more iron tyranny. We shall not always expect to find them supporting our view, but we shall always hope to find them strongly supporting their own freedom. Now, those are pretty powerful words. And again, I don't care if you're listening or what, we really need to be looking at words that make us feel good, make us feel positive. And sadly, so often, all we hear are negatives. We hear things that make people feel bad. When you hear those statements, it makes you feel really good and wonderful. Now, another one. This is from Ronald Reagan. Ronald Reagan at the Brandenburg, you know, the wall, basically, when he was here at the gate, totally against the advice of his advisors, he talked to Gorbachev. He said, General Secretary Gorbachev, if you seek peace if you seek prosperity for the Soviet Union and Eastern Europe, if you seek liberalization, come here to this gate, the Brandenburg Gate. Mr. Gorbachev, open this gate. Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall. This is also a wonderful speech if you hear it in terms of liberty, terms of, you know, maybe not different, but when Kennedy was there and said that he was a Berliner, I can't use the German, he said. But this is another wonderful talk. And another one that I think it could bring tears to your eyes if you really are patriotic, if you really see things that are inspirational. And it's that at the Normandy landing in 1984. This is all on YouTube, by the way. And it's Ronald Reagan's address to the old veterans at that time, were 60, 70, 80. And he talks about this Private Zanetta. And here's what he said to his daughter. "Someday, Liz, I'll go back," said Private First Class Peter Robert Zanetta of the 37th Engineer Combat Battalion, the first assault wave to hit Omaha Beach. "I'll go back and I'll see it all again. I'll see the beach, the barricades, and the graves." These words of Private Zanetta come to us from his daughter, Lisa Zanetta Hen, in a heart-rending story about the event her father spoke of so often. In his words, the Normandy invasion would change his life forever, she said. She tells some of his old stories of World War II, but says of her father, "The story to end all stories was D-Day. He made us feel the fear of being on that boat waiting to land. I can smell the ocean, feel the seasickness. I can see the looks of his fellow soldiers' faces, the fear, the anguish, the uncertainty of what lay ahead. And when they landed, I can feel the strength and courage of the men who took those first steps through the tide to what must have surely looked like instant death." My, oh, my. These are words, and it goes on and on. And if you hear it, remember this. We all have good parts and we all have bad parts, but we're a nation that needs inspiration. We need to feel good about ourselves. We have a lot of unemployment. We have a lot of suffering. We have a lot of things going, but we also are the United States of America. And those that would kill us and do us in, if they had the right to go anywhere they want, where would they go? Would we go there or would they come here? Margaret Thatcher had a very good point when she said, you judge a country not just by who,
propaganda.
You judge a country also by those that want to go to it and the freedom of those that want to leave. So these are the kinds of things that when you hear these things, it's important. And this does not mean we just go on a, you know, we love America type thing. But I think there's been enough of battering and blasting America. When you see a president of Mexico getting applause for attacking, you know, a state for doing something, whether you agree or not agree with coming to our country, particularly a country that really has trouble taking care of its own in many ways. I'm not even knocking it. Lived there for 6 months at one time. But this is a time to feel good about who you are. And it's a time not to run away from what we're maybe doing wrong or feel bad about, but it is a time to be proud of really who we are and really what we stand for. Now, a little, on maybe a humorous note, but something kind of fun. John, we're going to try and do our John Stewart imitation. Now, this is not really a political thing, because those that have heard me before know that I don't have too much faith in political parties, but this was just kind of cute. And it had to do with John Stewart was talking about when they had changed the name of the agency that was – what was
it? They were the oversight with the oil spill in the Gulf.
And John Stewart came out and said, are we really that stupid?
Yeah, they changed the name right
after the spill. They changed
the name. Hoping no one would notice.
And it just struck me as kind of funny. Not that all people don't do this and people don't try to make things look good. But the good thing about comedy – comedy is a way you can really, with a little lampoon, you can say thousands of words with just a few words. So basically, John Stewart is sitting there.
Yeah, and he's making the comment, are we really that stupid? Really? Or do they really think that the people are that stupid? And then he says, well, it'd be kind of like, and then there's a picture, of course, Superman. We keep talking about Superman today. There's a picture of the Christopher Reeves version of Superman, and he looks over, oh, Superman, thank you so much for saving us. Then he kind of turns around, and like he's shuffling with papers. Oh, hold on a second. Just give me 1 second. Then he turns back around, and the glasses have been put on, like the Clark Kent glasses. And Stuart looks at him. Oh, Clark, I didn't see you come in. Where did Superman go, and where did you get that Superman suit?
I mean, you know, it's such an outrageous skit, okay? And then, of course, he comes out with his idea of how to solve the problem.
Yeah, you solve the problem while the ocean is black, so you just rename the water H2O black, and that's problem solved.
And you see, the point is this. It doesn't make people look bad, but sometimes it's just best to come out and say, this hasn't worked, we'll do something different. But thinking that changing the name is going to do it different. And again, the reason it makes the Jon Stewart thing, I used to start Superman Day, I've always been amazed how taking his glasses off, all of a sudden, nobody notices that that is Clark Kent, which is really kind of a funny thing. So listen, let us take a break and we'll be back.
Now, back to Lansing's only live afternoon talk show, Ebling and You, on More Compelling Talk Radio, 1320 WILS.
Well, hello, this is Dr. John Braccio, and Dr. John Braccio Jr. will say, back here for Ebling and You at his gold throne is what John calls it here. I do have a question here that I have here that Judy, that what do we do when we find out a religious or other hero is not a hero, like Tiger Woods or O.J. Simpson? John, how would you answer something like that?
Well, I think it's that we recognize the simple reality that that person failed. But I also think it's even more important that we don't let it take away whatever fire that they had given us to, you know, the dare to be great type of a deal, the desire to be great, the desire to really push yourself and just recognize, okay, that person failed. So, you know, O.J. Simpson and Tiger come to mind. I mean, I still remember in high school with O.J., it's like I absolutely refused to believe it, but I think if he would have been my motivator to be, say, a football player, I don't think, or get into media the way he did, I think just after that fact, if I've gone this far, I think it's important to recognize, okay, human, but I still have this fire, I still have this desire to keep pushing myself.
And there's a danger in wanting to be a hero. You know, we all do things inappropriate. We all fail at certain moments. And I think it makes a lot of sense to come out and use the word, I'm not a hero, or I just try to do the best I can. Because as soon as you start buying into, I'm the biggest, I'm the best, I'm ahead of all the rest, the fall can be, it can really be pretty horrible, actually. So my view, another thing, even if we lose a hero, we all need heroes. We need people to model. We need people to respect. So if we lose a hero, believe it or not, we can try to find another or people we look up to. We can even look in the mirror and kind of push ourselves a little further. I have another question here, kind of a cheerful one here from Jack. I hate the holidays. Nothing is good. I'm depressed. What can I do? Well, that sounds like bah humbug to me. Well, first of all, I'm going to say what I think what everybody else ought to do. During this holiday time, I think everybody ought to be friendly and say hello to people. And you might even want to call somebody and invite them over for Thanksgiving, because that's kind of a negative little view. I hate the holidays. Nothing's good. I'm depressed. What can I do? What a cheerful. I bet he's a lot of fun to be around. So anyway, hey, come on. It's kind of tough. And I'll give you another thing. You have to laugh even when you feel bad and you're going through a difficult time. But again, there's someone that maybe needs to try to reach out, but maybe more all of us that are kind of happy and love the holidays and look forward to it, we really ought to reach out to somebody, invite somebody over, talk to somebody, and just have a basic smile, John.
No, yeah, and definitely. And you mentioned, the bah humbug approach. It's an interesting time of year with the holidays coming up, because it's both the happiest times, but then as we know in our work, it also can be the, for a lot of people, it's the depressing time too. But I like your advice of trying to reach out, trying to call people, just try to find humor in things and laugh.
So if you call someone, you say, how are you? I'm not very good. Why are you calling? I mean, that's probably, just kind of checking how you're doing. Same as last year. No, again, you kind of have to have humor. But again, people like to be talked to. People like to see a friendly, friendly face. So, and never forget that in the Christmas Carol, there is a happy ending as Scrooge joins the Crockett family and has a good time. So there is a happy ending. Now, one thing I want to do here, we're going to have Tom Crawford coming in here shortly from the Tom and Jack show, you know, in terms of the Saturday morning show. Tom is a great guy. And I'm going to throw a little something in here. His dad, Ferris Crawford, one of a, you know, associate superintendent with the state many, many years ago when I was really a young guy. And I'm before the current generation. I'm kind of the, what do they call us here? The silent generation. I'm actually of that age group. But his dad, just what a great guy. He had this kind of a very deep, raspy voice like that. And he really was helpful to young people because I was a young PhD, really pretty young guy. I was 27, right in that age group. And he was there quite helpful because he was kind of a big shot, you know, kind of. And he kind of was the kind of guy he never – in fact, talking about a hero, I guess I'll put Ferris in that category. Never behave like I'm better than you are. What do you know? Never that kind of guy at all. Kind of coach me how the rules work with the state, how things work in the legislature. So Tom comes from good pedigree, in spite of the fact that his mother graduated from the University of Michigan, but otherwise we'll try to overlook that. But Tom had a very emotional experience this past weekend, and it has to do with Josh Eady. Josh Eady, I don't know this young man, but from everything I hear, boy, what an incredible guy. What a great guy. A young kid at East Lansing High. Crawford's, he was a friend of the Crawford family and his son, Cody. And he's going to talk to us about this kind of emotional event that happened Saturday as it was a farewell to, you know, there were three members of the family that had died. And part of life is obviously living. Part of life is dying. This is a family, from what I hear, a very spiritual family that has great faith in God and in very difficult times, regardless of what you might think and you might feel, this can be a very powerful kind of a thing to help. And again, he'll be talking about this shortly. I've had people coming into my office, as I mentioned, you know, talking about this, and it's been kind of an amazing thing to see. I know one of the family, like I may have mentioned, Nancy McCoy, and she said this really drew the family together. She has married a cousin, you know, in terms of Josh, and knew him well, loved him dearly, that the family all has drawn together. And basically, she feels empowered, feels God has given her things, trying to look for the positive, because horrible things can also pull people closer to God. It's kind of unfortunate that in the best of times, people kind of lose their beliefs. And in this case, we're talking about, from what I hear, and certainly Tom would know, knowing the family, but I knew no part of the family. And from what Nancy says, this is a family that in the middle of darkness, there's a light. And that apparently there was an uncle who's a minister who gave an inspirational talk, that Coach Faraco, who was John's old football coach at Catholic Central, gave quite a talk. So overall, a wonderful family. And when I talk to someone who has tears, just happened to be one of those random having a discussion and hearing about how wonderful this family is and that it makes her feel appreciative of what family is and that really has pulled her stronger, even in her own faith and with her family, that it's really just a wonderful thing to see. And Tom will be talking about this from his perspective of knowing the boy, knowing the family, and what it meant. And it sounds trivial, but he did not go to the University of Michigan football game this past week. And that may sound small, and it is compared to a funeral of a beloved person, but still pretty big situation here.